Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.
Hello and welcome to Bend the Knee, a Song of Ice and Fire podcast. I am Sir Matt.
And I'm Sir Jimmy of House Nuts. Welcome to our Song of Ice and Fire book club. Today we are into brand three of A Storm of Swords, and we could probably call this Misconnections, maybe, would be a good title for this episode, because Bran comes ever so close to being reunited with his long-lost brother, I guess not long-lost, mediumly lost brother, Jon Snow, and we'll be hanging out with the Reeds and Hodor, which is always fun, talking about the gift. Talking about warging into human beings, which is a pretty massive deal that just kind of happens in this chapter and glossed over, which is cool. But Matt, how was your Thanksgiving, man?
It was pretty good, pretty uneventful. We went to the beach, just Teresa, me, and the baby, and the dog, and just real chill. You know, nice. Splitting some wood. It was real cold. Had to light a fire, get the fire going, and the wood
stove. How cold are we talking?
Like 30.
Okay, that is cold. Okay,
it's pretty cold. it was definitely pretty cold. And that cabin, you know, it's old and the insulation isn't particularly great. And there's definitely some spots that really don't even have insulation. So I got a fire going pretty much like the whole time. And yeah, other than that, man, it was pretty good. Unfortunately, my Buckeyes lost to that team from up north. My Steelers lost to your Browns over that thing. So yeah, it's just not been a good sports kind of weak for me,
taking your lumps,
but we beat the Bengals, so all right,
there's
another rival. There's another rival we can knock on, but I've always, you know, I want to beat the Browns more, especially in the snow.
I mean,
were you excited? Were you like, here we go?
I did not care at all.
You didn't care. You know, you're a Browns fan and you're like, yeah, whatever,
I'm gonna wait till Deshaun Watson's off the team to care anymore.
Yeah.
It's been a rough a roller coaster, actually, after last year being one of the best years, just magical in many ways, to this year being so depressing. But that's okay. It's low on my list of things that affect my mood, so that's a positive thing, I guess.
You're ready for Deshaun Watson to leave Cleveland.
Yes. I was never ready for him to come there, which I guess, you know, you could say a lot of people felt that way.
Probably. Yeah. You know, just something about sexually immoral leaders and, you know, we just don't want them on our team or, you know, anything like that. So,
yeah, not a huge fan of that, but man, it's a crazy week in the fantasy genre. So obviously A Song of Ice and Fire belongs to the fantasy genre. And I've been talking about how Tad Williams is releasing his final book. I've talked about this multiple times, I think, here on the podcast, but Tad Williams is one of the people who inspired George to write A Song of Ice and Fire. There's many inspirations, but Tad Williams' final book came out and I read it and I loved it. It was so good. It was book 7 of the main series and he wrapped it up so well. And then on top of that, this Friday, Brandon Sanderson's releasing his final book in the first half of the Stormlight Archive, which is book 5. I'm a pretty big fan of Stormlight, even though there's some things I don't love about it. But Matt, it just makes me sit here and think, like, as excited as I am for these things, how much more excited I would be for Winds of Winter. Mm-hmm. And I think I'm starting to feel a little bit of that hope again. I've been a little bit down since my November.
I was about to say, here we are, December 2nd.
You know, my prediction was wrong. I've had it for 5 years and it has come and gone. No announcement, no updates really. But for some reason, I still think that in my lifetime, if I don't die suddenly, that we'll see some version of Winds released, like something. And I look forward to that day.
Same. Yeah, we just got to keep holding out hope, man. Hold the door. See what George says, what he does. But hey, you know, we did have a little bit of news here, and you and I really had to go over this. So if you remember, a little while ago, we were talking about a Game of Thrones video game potentially
mm-hmm.
coming out. And then it sort of came out to this, like, all right, maybe it's going to be some sort of online MMO, and we got a little discouraged. Well, there was actually some gameplay footage shown, and it is called Game of Thrones King's Road. And I don't know, man, you and I were watching it, and we're thinking this kind of looks kind of cool, but we need to see more to really kind of, let me see if I can get this pulled up here. If
it's gonna... So it is a mobile game at first, and they said it's going to expand out for any of you people who like to play games on your phone. I mean, this looks like it's at least somewhat decent. The graphics are kind of cool. It looks like you're going to be fighting around with some wildlings, White Walkers, and such as Jon Snow. But it's very unclear, really, the details about the game outside of that. The trailer is cool, though.
Yeah, and then you and I were talking about, is it actually Kit Harington? We literally listened to this thing like 3 or 4 times to see if it's actually Kit Harington or not, who is voicing Jon Snow, because he has done work for video games in the past, and he did a commercial for that thing. But I mean, right here, the combat, as you and I are watching this trailer, I mean, okay, I can get behind that. I mean, that's, and it looks kind of good, like graphically.
I think we're just holding out for maybe them finally to get a Game of Thrones game completely correct, and it hasn't happened yet.
Yeah.
So maybe this will be the one.
I mean, but yeah, they say it's going to be a mobile game, and I'm just like, so, you know, immediately your thoughts are kind of like, I don't know, you know, mobile games kind of suck. But the combat here, I mean, how are you going to do that mobile? I mean, this looks like, I mean, this isn't like turn-based. This looks like an action. I mean, this looks like, I mean, it's not the same quality as God of War, but you know what I mean? It looks like a God of War. You know, I mean, look at the
almost combat. Like the Lord of the Rings games, Fight for Middle or Shadow of Mordor.
Yeah, it looks more like action adventure than it does like RPG. So I don't know. We'll have to wait and kind of see more. But you know, I think mobile game, to be fair to mobile games, like there are mobile games like say like a Genshin Impact that, I mean, do run well, look good. I mean, Fortnite is completely playable on mobile, and that's a huge, massive game. So I mean, our hope is that this could be something successful enough to open doors down the road to, you know, potentially more things, and who knows where you go from there.
Yeah, I mean, I'm gonna be cautiously optimistic because there's a good chance this turns out to just be a money sink, which would be super duper unfortunate, but who knows?
Yeah. Okay.
We'll have to see.
Yeah, we'll have to wait and see. So I was looking at some of the other things that company had made, and nothing really caught my eye. It seems like they've done this with a lot of franchises. They've done mobile games with, like, they did one for, like, Ni No Kuni, which is another RPG thing. They've made a Star Wars game. They did something with Paragon, which is like a PS4 kind of MOBA, PS4, PS5 MOBA as well. And so that's kind of what I saw. So I don't know. They have a game for the list. We're going to have to wait and see. It says it's coming out next year.
Yeah. So I guess we'll have to wait and see. And what comes out first, this or Wins a Winner? My bet's on the game, I think.
Sure. Yeah, that's for sure. I mean, you know, online in any video game thing you see, you know, one of the top things is always like, man, I can't believe we got this before GTA 6. GTA 6 is going to be like, man, I can't believe we got GTA 6 before Wins a Winner.
I think, unfortunately, that might be correct.
So, anyhow. All right. Well, hey, continuing on here, let's dive into today's chapter, which is a really good one. Bran 3. So Bran and the others reach a small deserted village on a lake. There's a holdfast tower on an island in the middle of the lake, and Bran tells them that the good Queen Alison once stayed there. Brandon's gift is a strip of land south of the wall to the distance of 25 leagues, which was once given to the Night's Watch to support them. The new gift given to the watch by Queen Alison and her husband, King Jaehaerys I, doubled that distance. Bran tells them there is a secret walkway just beneath the lake's surface that will allow them to reach the tower. They stay in the tower that night during a terrible thunderstorm, and Bran tells them that all the gates through the wall were sealed when each of the castles had to be abandoned, leaving only 3 gates open at each of the manned castles. When Hodor starts to scream in fear of the thunder, Bran reaches out to him the way he does Summer and calms the big man. Jojen spots men on the shore of the village, and Bran enters Summer to investigate. So this is one of my actual favorite chapters, kind of like collection of chapters in the whole series, just because we don't really have a lot of, it feels like we're always going from like, let's go to like King's Landing to the Wall, or like King's Landing to Essos, or Winterfell, you know, to the Reach or something. It feels like you're always jumping all over the place. Whereas these two chapters, it's kind of like you have Bran going this way and Jon coming this way, and you just get this little like path crossed. And it's just a cool little moment in this book, which is another reason why I love A Storm of Swords.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, this chapter has so much to it. Obviously, just seeing the reads on page to me is always fascinating because Jojen's very mysterious. We get a little bit of a sense that Jojen might not... There's like the evil Jojen theory that Jojen's actually maybe not looking out for Bran's best intentions. It's kind of a... I would say it's a niche theory, or I guess maybe reading of the text. I think that there's a line in here that kind of supports it a little bit, just the way Bran's attitude towards Jojen is at one point in the chapter. But on top of that, I mean, like, Bran wargs into Hodor, dude. Like, it's such a huge deal. And we hear in the series that warging into humans is forbidden. It's taboo, never to be done. But we also know that, and this is where we'll link to some crazy stuff, that Bloodraven ends up telling Bran that he cannot interact with timelines. He can only visit the past. He can only visit these scenes. But Bran already broke the warging rule. Who's to say that he won't break the time travel rule as well, with interacting with past events and whispering things in people's ears, which in this chapter we hear about a lot of Brans, don't we? We hear a lot about a lot about Brans of the past doing crazy things, the gift and sailing and all this stuff. And it made me wonder, is this Bran telling stories about himself from the future? Is that possible? I think it is.
Yeah. And that's something too, you know, you don't really think about, which is like, we always think of like, oh, it's Bloodraven influencing Jojen. And we, you know, you and I have talked a lot about like, are like moments that we can go back and look at later in the series when, if, you know, everything does go the way we think it's going to go. And it is Bran perhaps influencing things in the past. Like, oh, that was a moment that Bran influenced. That was a moment that
Bran influenced.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. There is actually a kind of a cool little line in here. So it's when Bran is talking about a lot of things, and I want to jump to it just because it kind of goes with exactly what you're saying. My uncle said the gates were sealed with ice and stone wherever a castle had to be abandoned, said Bran. Then we'll have to open them again, said Mira. That made him uneasy. We shouldn't do that. Bad things might come through the other side. We should just go to Castle Black and tell the Lord Commander to let us pass. Your grace, said Jojen. We must avoid Castle Black. Just as we avoided the King's Road. There are 100 of men there. But Jojen calls Bran your grace, which you typically only say to a king. So I don't know if this was a slip up by George or something specific, but it
wasn't a slip up by George. I can assure
you
that.
But you know what I mean? It's just so.
Well, Jojen has dreams. Does he not? Dude, I have never heard anyone point that out before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. He refers to Bran by your grace for the first time, which doesn't even register to Bran.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. So some people have speculated online that, that Jojen perhaps has already seen Rob die in a green dream. And that's why he's calling him your grace, because perhaps Jojen thinks he legitimately is. Of course, you know, the big theory is that Bran's going to end up as king, right? That's, you know,
it's one of the things George had.
One of the things George told them seems like it's a logical outcome, probably going to be the way it ends. Who knows? George may change things.
Yeah.
So maybe it could be something like that too. But yeah, it's just kind of interesting, right? And then I have some other speculations pulled up. And this is all stuff from before, by the way, season 8. So these are all like from the Song of Ice and Fire reread. Somebody saying,
which is really cool to think about.
Yeah, saying, I think this was perhaps touched on in an earlier chapter. I want to call out Jojen referring to Bran as your grace. Is this foreshadowing of the Red Wedding? Has Jojen had a green dream of what is to come, or does the chapter take place after the Red Wedding? You know, because in theory, like everything isn't perhaps as chronological as we think it is.
Yeah, there's a note at the beginning of the book that says that. Yeah.
Yeah, this chapter, and then he goes on to some other things too. But yeah, that your grace is so subtle, it slips right by.
Dude, I love that so much. So this is probably a pretty big deal, because this chapter has a lot of what would appear to be like mundane events happening that we know have payoffs later. And with Bran's connection to the Three-Eyed Crow and hearing about these brands of the past, I think this chapter might be just one of these big like vortexes of context.
Every Bran chapter is.
Yeah, that we come back to. I mean, he works in the Hodor for the first time, which is foreshadowing for what will happen with Hold the Door, which is why he says Hodor. Like, there's so much there.
And I want to specifically talk about this, and I'm not remembering exactly a Storm of Swords or a Clash of Kings Bran 3 and what that chapter looks like, but I do know in a Game of Thrones Bran 3, the Game of Thrones chapter is where he has his first vision. He has his first, mm-hmm. that's like one of the biggest chapters in the whole series. It's where he's like flying around and he's seeing all of these things, like a mountain. It talks about like a mountain and a lion when he's talking about Jaime Lannister and all of these things he sees as he's sort of flying through over the whole kingdom. And it is also Bran 3. Now here we have Bran 3, and it's the first time he sort of wargs into Hodor. So it's almost like Bran 3 chapters are or he sort of unlocks new abilities.
Yeah, man.
Another one of George's like codings, and it's crazy.
That's really, really cool. Do you think that we're hearing about our Bran as Brans of the past? Like, do you think that that's possible?
Oh, I don't know. That's a theory I don't know. It's just one of those things I really haven't thought a ton about, like all of the different Brandons, if they are sort of the same person or if it's just the only other thing I can sort of think of. I think that's sort of a good example is like the Legend of Zelda series.
Oh yeah.
Which is where, you know, there's always like staples in the Legend of Zelda series. It's always like you always have a Link, a Zelda, and a Ganon, or, you know, Ganondorf, who, you know, they each have their respective part of the Triforce and the power. And it's like every game that takes place, for the most part, there are some direct sequels, but it's sort of like time. Actually, the Legend of Zelda series is actually very much like the Wheel of Time. Or I should actually say that the Wheel of Time is very much like the Legend of Zelda series, since first. And you know, it's where it's those cycles sort of keep happening. And maybe it's just sort of that's just part of, you know, something even beyond Bran as this like entity of the Three-Eyed Crow that he could become and have influence over the past. Maybe it is also just a cyclical thing, perhaps even like Azor Ahai and the Long Night and things like that. Every Bran that comes will have some sort of major cataclysmic significance or significance on the world.
And just knowing that he can influence the things of the past, and you know, he breaks the Warg rule here, he'll probably break the time influencing, like time events influencing rules later. It's fascinating to think about that this young boy is most likely going to be like everything in the series, which is at the heart of fantasy and the tropes of fantasy, coming of age, chosen one, though this chosen one's definitely a little bit different than the other ones that I've read. I really love it. I really enjoy it. And also it would be very George-like to use the quote unquote broken one to be the one that actually ends up saving the world. Cause I think that's the kind of heroic fantasy that George was trying to write about, less so the big strong warrior type, you know, super masculine man, just like saving everyone. You know, we have a teenage girl with three nuclear weapons at her side. Mm-hmm. We have Arya being trained in Braavos, and we have Bran in a wheelchair going on the biggest adventure he could possibly go on, most dangerous, Sam the Slayer, right? Like a lot of the heroes in the series are not typical heroes. And I think, especially for the time it was written in the genre, that's what George set out to do. And he gets a lot of crap for like writing nihilistic work or whatever, and there is nihilism in it because that's part of life, but I think that he's always all along been writing heroic fantasy. It's just not the type that we're used to seeing, with like Arthur taking the sword out of the stone, or Rand Althor being like this OP character in Wheel of Time, or whatever else, right? So a little bit more akin to maybe hobbits and what they were able to do.
I agree. And what are your thoughts on it? The brand, all of the different brands. Do you think it is the same person? Do you think it is? I mean, do you think it's brand going back and influencing other brands? Do you think it is more of like a Legend of Zelda type thing where you will have like a Link that's constantly born and that's going to be a hero of
I think I like that almost more of than like maybe just the typical like time travel to the past to change things. I think that those Brandons or brands did exist, and I think he influenced them. But you and I have also speculated, how in the world does it work between people? Like who was before Brendan Rivers is the big question. Brendan Rivers to Brand. Well, who was before? Who will come after? And like, is there a link between them all? Like, do they all become one entity at some point? Yeah. And if Brand's influence in the past, doesn't that mean that Brendan Rivers is also influencing?
Well, the past? Maybe that's the difference, right? Because if you want to go down that route, like, so, and I'm going to keep referencing The Legend of Zelda, because I think it is a very good comparison to this series, just trying to, and I think you can also view Wheel of Time in this a little bit too, because it's pretty similar. Yeah. Is like in Wheel of Time, Randall Thor isn't just like the dragon reborn. He is also Tavirin, and he is all like,
he has
like
the multiple stars aligned.
Yeah, the stars sort of aligned where you have multiple things that come together for this one person to make him that significant. Right, because they're obviously, the dragon has been reborn multiple times in Wheel of Time, but it's not until Randall Thor that everything changes.
Yeah, right? No, that's a good point. And also, we're living in a time where magic has died from the world. Magic is now coming back in ever since the meteorite. Or was it the hatching of the dragon? Or did the dragon hatch because of the, like, we don't know.
Exactly.
But it's clear the things are getting more magical.
Right, because, in Wheel of Time, yeah, you have all of the stars align on this one person. To have all of these significant things, and you kind of see the same, and he's also a sword master, right? And like all of these things that are sort of special groups that are rare inside of their own thing all come together on this one person to make him that significant. And maybe that is the deal with this brand, as you know, and like in Zelda, in the Legend of Zelda series, it's always like these three entities, essentially, for the most part. There are some games that don't do it, but like it's always like they come up, because almost every princess is named Zelda in the Legend of Zelda series, you know what I mean? So it's like, but you don't always have a Link, and you don't always have a Ganon who is in, and if you're people who are unfamiliar with it, it's sort of like the Wheel of Time, except it's always like these three people, essentially. Yes. It keeps happening along the line of these three people. There, though, it's a little different in that once they serve their purpose, more often than not, that's it. It's sort of, that is their story, and it's actually more for like a year or two, as opposed to like that person's entire life. Whereas in here, it, with Brand, it feels like, no, it's this guy's like entire life is going to be that significant like thing.
Yeah,
definitely. Because because Brand is a green seer in his own right. Brand is also a warg. He also has.
Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at tanger.com.
As
the old blood,
old blood, right? And the blood of ice, which might be something to go along with it. And then also, he's going to become the three-eyed crow. So maybe it's all of those things, as opposed to Brendan Rivers, who might just be a green seer and also has the blood of the dragon, as opposed to the blood of ice. And maybe that's the deal with Jon Snow, is that he's going to have the blood of ice and fire. And you need those things together to happen at the right time. So yeah, there's a lot of like those moving pieces and prophecy and things like that that could be coming together with Bran at this moment.
Yeah, and it's hard to know exactly where it's going to go, because we don't have all the answers, and a lot of the stuff in lore wise is nebulous. But I do think that there's clearly a history of brands doing things that are very important for not just their time, but to affect the future, like the wall, right? Like, I mean, that's obviously been a huge thing. It shaped the world of Westeros, at least. So I like the theory. I'm not willing to say that Bran's time traveling and entering in different ages, but I think he has influenced events. And I do think there are probably just important people throughout history. Maybe there have been multiple Azor Ahais. We don't know that, but you know, just, it's fun to speculate about. It just feels like the mentions of the brands here are really important, considering the fact that he wargs into Hodor, which is foreshadowing for the hold the door moment, obviously. And also just him uttering his name over and over and over again is definitely that. I think the Your Grace line is 1000% intentional and foreshadowing for Bran's king, him being king. So I think that those are also hints. I think this is a chapter where George is probably giving us a lot. Mm-hmm. We just don't realize it yet.
Yeah. So, okay. I want to re-reference the Song of Ice and Fire reread subreddit, because this was created, the last time they were on it was 2012. So this is well before Hodor.
Wow.
Hold the door. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, people trying to break the Hodor code, these are people who obviously have no idea that it's going to be hold the door and the, you know, the significance.
There's also a lot of talk about doors in this chapter, by the way.
There is. So this chapter also has the second most, I don't know what the significance of that is, but it does have the second most Hodors in any chapter. So it is just kind of interesting about people picking it up. So this is, again, so here I'm going to read this. It's from Silverius on the Song of Ice Fire reread from 9 years ago. Lots of Hodoring in this chapter. In fact, if my code of regular expression, like he breaks down like how Hodor even says it,
yeah, right?
This chapter has 41 shades of Hodor, the second most of any chapter. The most Hodors in any chapter is in Brand 2 of A Dance with Dragons. It says, Hodor is panicking because of the lightning storm. I can't say I disagree. On the, out in the open or in a tower, lightning can be very scary, you know, because it hit people. He's like, I do find it a bit strange that they wade through water, which is presumably pretty cold, then just wade out in the tower. You'd lose a lot of warmth that way since they don't make a fire. They don't eat any apples because they're wormy. He said, I found myself wondering why the Northern Lords would let it go so far as a whole area in the wild that the wildlings can't just do as they please. But in the next chapter, John actually makes a note that Ned did indeed plan on doing something about it, but that was a dream for spring, which Ned does say in the next, or John does say in the next chapter. He does specifically say
so cool,
a dream for spring. Nice, almost title drop there. He says, now we know the height of the wall and the tower is stated to be 5 stories high. We know the length of the wall, so we can't measure distances in the map, and besides, the width of the gift is given. So he's just kind of commenting on the rest of it, but yeah, so it's just kind of like interesting to look at some of these things that people are saying about, like, man, Hodor and trying to break down the code. And like, it's like pretty crazy, you know, like trying to see people like speculating, like, man, what does all this mean? Of course, now we know that it's all hold the door. And there are actually moments where we did at one point a big breakdown on like I went through and did a breakdown of like every time Hodor is mentioned and stuff like that. And a lot of them do actually involve moments in which Hodor, when Bran goes into Hodor or is being carried by Hodor, there are literally references in which Bran is like asking Hodor to like hold the door open, or Hodor goes through a door. It's very,
yeah. And this chapter, they talk about doors. So whenever they get to the top of the tower, there's like 4 doors, 3 going out to the palpits and then 1 going to a privy or something like that. Mm-hmm. They talk about the at the wall, there's doors underneath that are frozen shut and gates that are frozen shut. There's a ton of doors mentioned in this chapter. Also, from a writing perspective, I think George is building the tension of the scene. There's almost like a percussion to it where Hodor is picking up Hodors as the scene's getting more tense. Like, you know, they see people, lightning's flashing. It's meant to build a rhythm within the chapter for like almost a sense of trepidation. And that's why George is, he does this with the drums in the Red Wedding chapter, as we'll read eventually here in the near future. So also just from like a writing perspective, he uses it to great effect.
Yeah. I will say this chapter does, and we talked about it in the, just in the, when I was reading the description of it from the wiki, it is kind of cool. This is also kind of a lore dump chapter, and you get like the story of the gift and the new gift and Queen Allison, which, you know, has now been expanded in Fire and Blood. Hey, when she went there, she couldn't fly over the wall. And so sort of like the significance of that whole event. And now you think about that. Like, of course, when George is writing this, maybe he had that as idea in his head. We as readers never knew it until Fire and Blood was published, that he changed some of that language to make it seem like, oh, when Allison went there, she couldn't fly over the wall. And I don't know if we have a timeline, and I was trying to read to see about the gift, but clearly she went there and sees the wall and then is like, all right, well, I'm going to give these people more land. So maybe because she's spooked out about it a little bit, it's like, maybe the Night's Watch needs to be a little bit stronger than we think. Or she just went there and was like, this is impressive. All right, I'm going to do something good for you guys.
It could be either.
So that could be something about the new gift too.
Yeah.
That obviously is outside of this chapter and has been sort of expanded upon in recent media.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Which kind of changes the story behind that too.
It does. It does. I like that.
Yeah. Okay.
People who don't like Bran chapters are crazy.
Oh no, Bran is actually you know, because I've talked about when I did that Jon Snow breakdown and talking about, by the way, that was the biggest shock to me when I went through and did an analytical breakdown of Jon Snow chapters. Like every time Jon is mentioned, he is mentioned most in Bran chapter. Well, besides Sam, because Sam is like in direct proximity with him, mm-hmm. but he is mentioned most in Bran chapters, which I always thought it would be Arya, because Arya has Needle, and every time she touches Needle, you know, it's just an easy reference to say like Jon, but it is Bran who he shows up the most in.
Probably because Bran knows that Jon is going to end up being possibly Azor Ahai, but also he's going to be the one to figure out Jon's parentage. So,
just pretty interesting too with the thing with that. Now, when you go on to, and Bran is giving a lot of the background, he does have a cool little line here too. He's talking about the ghost castles old Nan had called them. Maester Luwin had once made Bran learn the names of every fort along the wall that had been hard. There were 19 of them all told, though no more than 17 had ever been manned at one time. At the feast in honor of King Robert's visit in Winterfell, Bran had recited the names for his uncle Benjen, east to west and then west to east. Benjen Stark had laughed and said, "You know them better than I do, Bran. Perhaps you should be first ranger. I'll stay here in your place." That was before Bran fell, though, before he was broken. By the time he'd woken crippled from his sleep, his uncle had gone back to Castle Black, which, hey, we also get a Benjen reference.
Benjen's all over this book, man. It's pretty clear that he's going to have a role to play, or at least there'll be some sort of reveal at some point.
Yeah, I also think that chapter, by the way, is a fun little way for George to write his mistake of not having Bran in that chapter, and for whatever reason it's caused people to really like freak out, like, why wasn't Bran there? As if it was some sort of thing, and George is like, I guess I forgot to include Bran. I think it literally was just an honest mistake by George.
Hey, it happens.
Yeah, to not include Bran because he wasn't part of the story, so now he can say, well, Bran was there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it happens with books this big especially, and also I feel like there's less resources given to authors when they're first starting out, and then after this became a huge success, I'm sure that they were willing to put in a lot more time and to help George out with editing and stuff. So it's not shocking the first few books have some continuity errors and horse genders that are mixed up and everything else. Yeah.
Okay, there's another line just a little bit further down here. "But my father was a friend of the Night's Watch, and my uncle is First Ranger. He might know where the Three-Eyed Crow lives. And John's at Castle Black, too. Bran had been hoping to see John again and their uncle, too. The last Black brothers to visit Winterfell said that Benjen Stark had vanished on a ranging, but surely he would have made his way back by now. I bet the Watch would even give us horses," he went on. Hmm. And then there's something that happens, which is kind of interesting because it is John. They don't know it. It's one of the writers, and that it is actually John that he's going to that he's going to see. But that line, "Benjen might know where the Three-Eyed Crow lives," which a lot of people are like, "Oh, because he is Colt Hands." But it's possible. Well, now we know he's. Well, in theory, to give it like a 5% chance, he could be. But I think George would have revealed it by now. And
George definitely had said in the past that it was not Cold Hands.
He's right. He has said that Benjen is not Cold Hands, but that doesn't open the idea that it's like, well, he's not Benjen anymore. He's Cold Hands. Like, unless like Katie, like, well, like Lady Stoneheart is not Catelyn
Stark. Right. But the thing is it was in a note to his editor. And I don't think he would have said it that way to his editor. Because you work pretty close. His editor, he's actually very good friends with. Same editor Robin Hobb has. And me and you also think it's Dunk the Tall.
For sure. Yeah, I think it's Sir Duncan the Tall. At least that's who is the most likely.
It seems very likely to me.
Yeah, but I do, that is something to think about with Benjen and Benjen's role, because you know that's the character we speculate a lot on, is what is going on with him, what's the deal? If he's not Cold Hands, then what is that going to be like? Because we very much, I think you and I are both in agreement, like John has to have an interaction with Benjen. But is Bran also going to have an interaction with Benjen? Because he does in the show, but it's like with Cold Hands.
So I have a bit of a theory about this, and it's that I feel like there's a good chance that Benjen was used as a safe keep. Like, George was like, I'm going to leave the possibility open that Benjen could re-enter the story in case I need him. Mm-hmm. But if we never saw Benjen again, it's easy to go, well, he died.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering if George left that door open just in case.
Now,
another example of this is Tyrion's dragon dreams. Lots of dragon dreams for Tyrion, dragon symbolism, him burning Castle Rock. It could end up just being nothing, right? It's just a Tyrion's mad. He's thinking about using dragons to burn his home, whatever. But he could also use that later to do something really crazy with Tyrion. So I'm wondering if Benjen's one of those open doors that George just wants to keep there in case he needs it.
Mm-hmm. Could be, yeah, maybe. And that was his plan mm-hmm. all along. And it's just another one of those things that sort of outgrew him. And now he's going to have to do something with it.
Yeah, it could be.
That was the case.
But okay. He also could, but I just want to say, like, if he were not to show up, I would kind of be like, oh, that's weird. But like, it wouldn't be a plot hole. It would just be that, oh, okay, well, we thought about it, and he's gone. He's dead. Like, it would make perfect sense for him to be dead, right? Yeah. And I guess we think about people who are dead all the time that aren't coming back, right? So it's not completely infeasible to think that, like, or unfeasible to think that, like, Bran and Jon and these people would think of him all the time because they loved him. So
yeah. Yeah. Okay. I want to move a little bit down here in the chapter. So this is when he's about to go like sort of inside of Hodor. So Hodor is like freaking out, like Hodor, you know, like screaming. The stable boy screamed as lightning filled the sky, and even Jojen was shouting at Bran and Mira to shut him up. Be quiet, Bran said in a shrill, scared voice, reaching up uselessly for Hodor's leg as he crashed past. Reaching. Hodor staggered and closed his mouth. He shook his head slowly from side to side, sank back to the floor, and sat cross-legged. With a thunder boomed, he scarcely seemed to hear it. The four of them sat in the dark tower, scarce daring to breathe. Bran, what did you do? Amir whispered. Nothing. Bran shook his head. I don't know. But he did. I reached for him the way I reach for Summer. He had been Hodor for half a heartbeat. It scared him. Something is happening across the lake, said Jojen. I saw a man pointing at the tower. I won't be afraid. He was the Prince of Winterfell, Eddard Stark's son, almost a man grown in war too, not some little baby boy like Rickon. Summer would be afraid. Summer would not be afraid. So, and then that line by night, all cloaks are black, Your Grace. And the flash came and went too fast for me to tell what they were wearing. So there again, we have another Your Grace that. So, which is, yeah, so Jojen has started calling him Your Grace in this chapter.
Foreshadowing.
Yeah. So what's kind of interesting about that line too is, if you think about it in the proximity of this, is if you look at that line, I won't be afraid, he was the Prince of Winterfell. I'm the Prince of Winterfell. I'm Eddard Stark's son, almost a man grown, and a warg, not some baby little boy. Summer would not be afraid. So in that little line there, it's very much like the lines we see in Arya's chapters, where she's thinking about, like, I'm Arya Stark of Winterfell, and she's going over the things, or the Daenerys chapters, where she's thinking, I am blood of the dragon, be a dragon. Mm-hmm. It's sort of Bran's thing too, where he is like, don't be afraid, Bran. That's sort of his mantra. And then the last thing he thinks about is like, wolves are not afraid. So yeah, it's kind of like the opposite of Daenerys, but it's like, be a wolf. And then as he's thinking of all of these things, you have Jojen kind of pulling him in another direction. By night, all cloaks are black, Your Grace. And almost like pulling him towards maybe his thing. It's like pulling him away from the wolf, which Jojen, remember, tells him is something that Jojen does.
Yeah. And also in this chapter, Bran says Jojen got his way, as he usually did, or he always did, or something like that. And in the way it was said, is just very like, it's not a positive outlook for Jojen. It's like, man, Jojen is such a good leader. It's more like what Jojen wants, Jojen gets. Though he's going to get turned into paste eventually anyway, so it doesn't actually matter, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So what ends up happening is, that's really kind of it, right? There's a man, then the wolf shows up. Like, Jojen, let's see. they're kind of looking and seeing what's going on. He found himself out in the rain, his belly full of deer. So he's gone inside summer at this point, cringing in the brush as the sky broke and boomed above him. The smell of rotten apples and wet leaves almost drowned the scent of man, but it was here. It was there. He heard the clink and slither of hard skin, saw men moving under the trees. A man with a stick blundered by, a skin pulled up over his head to make him blind and deaf. The wolf went wide around him behind a dripping thorn brush and beneath the bare branches of an apple tree. He could hear them talking, and beneath their scents of rain and leaves, a horse came the sharp red stench of fear. So then, just real quick, we immediately move into the John chapter. And this is kind of interesting. So Ygritte is talking to John, and they're looking up saying, like, who built that all of stone like that? Ygritte, looking at like that tower. Some king? No, just the men who used to live here. What happened to them? They died or went away. Brandon's gift had been farmed for thousands of years, but as the watch dwindled, there were fewer hands to plow the fields, tend the bees, and plant the orchard. So the wild had reclaimed many a field and hall. In the new gift, there had been villages and holdfasts whose taxes rendered the goods and labors, helped feed and clothe black brothers, but those were largely gone as well.
So two perspectives looking at the same thing in many ways.
Yeah. And here you have Ygritte and like John looking at it and talking about like, it's like, it had been Brandon's gift too.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's kind of an interesting piece of like the whole thing. And now you have Bran over there and it's like Bran leaves and like the Night's Watch dwindles. Like maybe Bran is the shield that guards the realms of men and he leaves. And so it dwindles, you know, it's almost like maybe there's must always be a Bran at the wall or something. I don't know.
It also could definitely be that it was a necessity for all this to happen to finally put an end to whatever this existential threat is going to be.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, we'll save a lot of the next part of this, which is the John chapter, which kind of is a direct going on, but yeah, there is quite a lot of talks of dreaming of spring in this next chapter, right? Which is just crazy. Yeah, this little block right here is one of my favorite blocks, just because they're this and sort of the, you know, we talked about like the battle of King's Landing, the battle of the Blackwater, where it's just, you just get this bouncing back and forth. It's really, really cool.
Yeah, definitely.
And then it goes to Daenerys chapter, like on the total opposite side of the world,
tightly coupled as far as geography goes. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. So yeah, these last few chapters have been just a little short. So just kind of shorter episodes.
It's one of the reasons why this 1200 page book flies by though, is because the chapters are so snappy and they might not be big in page, but they are big in implications and big in details. There's always something to dive into. I mean, this Bran chapter is one of, I bet you if this series were ever to be finished, this chapter we'd come back to, it'd be one of the most important chapters.
Yeah. I will say one other thing I want to pull up from the Reddit. It is crazy over there. They apparently, this chapter, they talk about there must be some sort of like, you have a line of sight from the top of the tower and there must be something in there about like how far it is. Mm-hmm. And so people have like tried to break down based upon like the curve of Planetos and all this stuff to like figure out how like it's like a full-on like math equations. You got like physicists in here and like people like breaking it down to try to figure out exactly how large the planet is based upon it's like George, I don't think, was like trying to do that, but
it's with so fun.
I know, but with the equation these people have broken this down, they've said that it was probably a Planetos is smaller than Saturn and Jupiter, but might still be as large as like Uranus or Neptune, which I don't know how they are in compared to the Earth.
I have no idea how to be as big as Uranus.
Yeah, I knew you were gonna make a joke about that.
That's why you have me here.
So both of those are larger. All of those planets are larger than Earth. I knew Jupiter was for sure. Yeah. So both Uranus and Neptune are sizably about five times larger than Earth.
Yeah, we're a little dinky planet, dude.
Yeah. So Planetos might be like, you know, five times the size of Earth.
Crazy.
According to the calculations you could make from like one line that George probably was not planning on people breaking down to this degree.
which I love. This is back, I think, when the fandom had not yet become a little bit jaded and, mm-hmm. and somewhat toxic. I mean, we're pretty lucky with our audience, but you know, it can be a little bit frightful out there. But that's back whenever it was still like, man, the book's coming any day now. Let's have some fun.
Maybe one of our listeners can really break down the numbers and dive into it and give us a more accurate description. You know,
I would love that.
I would love that as well. So, all right. Well, yeah, like we said, this is sort of a shorter chapter this week, but next week we kind of jump into really what I consider part two of this, which will be John 5. So with that, as always, guys, I want to thank you for playing the Game of Thrones. In our next episode, we will be discussing A Storm of Swords, chapter 41, John 5.
And if you like our podcast, don't forget to subscribe, like us, write a review, or leave a comment, or send us a raven at btkcast@gmail.com or bendtheknee.com.
We'll see you next time. And remember that winter is coming.
Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.